Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Top of the morning.
Good morning, Russell.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Good, yourself, dude.
We've got a Graham with us today.
Hello.
And we've got a Marigold with us today.
Hi.
And welcome to our guest episode. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our lovely video store here. We get together weekly to chat about the film and TV that we're watching. Our main episode is on a Tuesday where we just have no interruptions and we talk about all the movies and series that we're watching. But when we have a cool and interesting customer that's going to come and visit us, we record the guest episode. So this is the guest episode and we are going to have the actor Pitty Bayers pop in to rent something. Mm. I am a big fan of this guy. He is not only a lovely dude, but he is a very talented actor who's been in many a film and TV, many of which we've screened and premiered at the Bioscope, but his new film, Exi Perfexi, is going to come out tomorrow. So on the day that this episode's released, it is going to come out tomorrow on Showmax. It is a Showmax original film, and it looks delightful. So we are going to get into that. In the movie as well, it is worth mentioning that both Cindy and Maud, two other actors who have both popped in to the video store in this film.
Okay.
So it looks to be lekker fun and lekker cool.
Cool.
Petey's one of those people who I just think is such a nice person. You can kind of get this quite immediately when you meet him. So on the many occasions I've seen him, we hang out. So for all of those who don't know Petey, I think he has a great chance to really get to know this person. I think you'll hopefully identify a lot with him and what's going on in his life and be excited to hear about this film. But for all those who know him and perhaps are visiting us for the first time, we'd like to think our chats are a little different. We go at it through the films that these people have liked across their lives. Mm-hmm. And so it's a nice, interesting angle and sort of way in. And so I think you're going to get a very different sense of him. You're going to get a more rounded sense of who Petey is. So
nice.
I think we should waste no time.
Yeah.
Have you guys got something that can keep you busy while Petey pops in?
Oh, Lord. I didn't think of a joke, so no.
Okay. Maybe you guys can organize a shelf.
Yeah.
What would you want to focus on?
Something obscure. Italian horror movies.
Italian horror.
I might help.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Marigold loves horror. Okay, let's get into it. This is Pitty Bayers popping in to rent something. How's it?
Lekker and you, Russell.
It's so good to see you.
It's awesome to see you, dude. We've been wanting to do this for a while.
Yeah. And I've been lucky enough to have you come to the Bioscope often.
Yes.
Most of the time it's to be at the premieres of these things that you're making, be it TV shows or movies. And every time we chat, we get to know each other just a little bit better.
Yes, yes.
To the point where I feel like I know you.
I feel the same, dude. I feel there's a kinship. That's the word I wanted to use. No, I've been lucky enough to be part of some projects that's been premiered here. And it's always just, visiting the Bioscope is always, it feels like I'm plugging in to, you know, when you feel like you're part of, I don't want to say connection or buzz, but like the forefront, it feels just like things that are on the forefront of this industry happens here. And
nice.
You also always like cool and hospitable. So it's just really lekker.
Yeah, well, there's every now and again, someone talks about doing something. So for example, I heard once there's a filmmaker, John Barker, and years ago, he's like, we have this night where we read scripts just before they start shooting for like one last read through. And we do it in Melville because I live in Melville. Mm. And I remember at the time going, this has to happen at us.
Yeah.
Like, I want this to happen at us. If someone's talking about something cool, it's like, you know, every now and again, I get it. We're a 47-seater. So often there's a film that needs, you know, a 500-seater cinema. But I want to be a part of it all.
But I think you guys cater for, to me, it feels, it's weird because the space is, it's weird, like, I'm getting into it straight away. But go like, you know, it feels like there's this thing where it's like the more personal, the more universal. And and what I mean with that is like, it might be a 47-seater, but the fact that it's intimate makes it feel big and significant. Okay. And the fact that it's a good experience, it's almost like a curated, bespoke experience where you come here, like you
quality
feel well.
Quality over quantity,
yes,
in a sense.
Yes, you can get like a drink and some popcorn. You see cool stuff. The artwork is epic.
Yeah.
There's cool people. Like, I've been here for movie premieres, but I've also been here for a Van Pletzen CD launch, album launch, right? Yeah. So and
remember
that so it's, there's all kinds of cool shit happening.
Yeah,
here,
that was a special night. On a bunch of notes, it was cool to meet Kurt Darren. Never met that guy.
What a
before.
Cool guy! He seems like a nice guy.
Then the fucking mummy walked in.
Yes. Arnold Foster
walked in, and I showed him the fact that we've got this stupid carpet. I don't know whether you've seen it on the way in.
Uh-huh.
We realized we wanted a carpet that people could, you know, wipe their feet on before coming in. And to be honest, early version of this 44 Stanley Bioscope, the concrete was coming up. So I needed to cover this concrete.
Yes.
I've since fixed it.
Yes.
But this carpet was very strategically placed to cover these holes. And I wanted to make this normal, like, heavy-duty, good carpet. 9 times out of 10, a company would put their brand on it.
Yes.
But I gave them the stupid thing to write, which is, I would rather be watching the 1999 cinematic masterpiece, The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser and Raquel Weiss, however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, we got the stupid carpet. We should have put your name on it if I knew you were coming.
Yes, that is brilliant, dude. Yeah.
But we want to talk about your movie.
Yes.
I think it's very cool that it came up and the folks at Showmax told me about it.
Yeah.
I'd love you to talk about the movie.
Yes.
And then when they said, do you want to talk to the folks involved? I said, hey.
Yeah, it's time.
Let's get pity. This is now, it's time to talk about something.
Yeah, 100%. Bro.
What is this movie?
This movie, it's called Exi Perfexi.
Okay.
Which sounds like a very Afrikaans name, but it's quite a...
It's got a sort of lipstick, dipstick kind of sensibility to it.
You're right on the money. So, I was telling you just before we started this podcast that it sounds like such a sales pitch, but I'm not getting anything revenue-wise, whether the movie does well or not. But it's you do sometimes do things where you know, which is a bit more of a corporate thing, and you pitch up and you're professional, and then you do stuff that feels like quite a passion project kind of thing. And obviously there's a mixture of both. But this is really something that's like, ever since we've finished shooting it, I'm still thinking about it and I'm still excited about it, even though I was sick on the shoot.
I heard about this.
I had like fever. It was rough, but we'll get there.
I want to get into that. They called it a raunch-com, which was the first time I'd heard that, and I quite like that term. So it's a comedy. It's a comedy film where you, perhaps you can give the synopsis, but the idea is that you are in a relationship with someone, and are you going to go serious? You're going to like get married, or where are you in the relationship?
So basically the lead character is actually kind of, he's been sort of a bit disillusioned by love. He's actually now on his own mission. He meets a girl quite early in the movie, which sort of starts a bit of a connection, and there's something going on. But she's quite a complex person with a shitload of exes in her life, and they're all still part of her life. But they're like all her best friends, and wherever they go, these exes keep on popping up. So it's like a 6-for-1 deal, and this guy's like,
"What the fuck's going on here?
Why is this happening?" So there's a bit of absurdist comedy to it.
Yeah.
But it's
mostly you hanging out with these exes and the relationship of you being the current boyfriend with all these exes.
And exactly. And they are the most, it's like such a motley crew of people. We've got Bobby van Jaarsveld.
He's that like hunky bro.
A hunky bro. Dude, he is cock funny in it.
Okay.
Everyone, it's It's yeah. Because
he's a singer, right?
He's a singer, but he acts really well. He's always wanted to act, always okay. been wanting to act, and he's really good. Some people just have it, dude. He just and he's so professional.
And some people are really shit.
yes. So
some people think they have it. Like yes. Conor McGregor thinks he has it. Have you watched Roadhouse?
With Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, he's such a shit actor.
Really?
Yeah,
dude.
And you think the Oak could put on this like persona because he kinda acts
yeah.
this kind of
yes,
role.
Yes, of course.
Oh no, he's hammy. Okay. All right, but back to
so Exi Perfecti, let me put it to you like this. So the guy who wrote it and directed it, he's a bit of a like a, think Lipstick Dipstick was a very good reference, and okay. think almost Judd Apatow kind of vibes.
Yeah.
So he's a friend of mine. We became friends quite a while back. He's like from Oudtshoorn, but yeah. he's such a funny dude.
What's his name?
Corné Kuchelenberg.
Okay.
Because he
it's a
is
a very Afrikaans name.
Dude, but the funniest thing is. Yeah. He's like the anti-artist's artist. He pretends like, and I mean this, okay. I've got lots of love and time for him. So we swim together and do all kinds of stuff together. But like, he's one of those guys, he's the least pretentious person I've ever met in my entire life.
Love it.
He talks about Oudtshoorn's weather and like, if he can go for a jog, but it's too hot. And he almost like sells himself as though he is not into art. He yeah. wants to talk about cricket and sport most of the time.
Yeah.
But he's actually a fucking deep spirit. like okay. in a cool way. Like, he's not pretentious, but he's like, okay. somebody recently said something, and I mean it in love. This is like the, yeah, this yeah. is almost like you can take this out and this will be clickbait vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's going to, but I mean it in a beautiful way. Like, if you know, if there's some listeners out there who know one or two Afrikaans directors or whatever, somebody on set said he's like the creative love child between Christian Olwagen and Willy Esterhuizen. And Christian Olwagen is like
Christian Olwagen. Well, like, I know of him. I've never met him.
Yeah, so it's like very, it's like high art.
Yes.
And Willy Esterhuizen is like the man of the people, you know, jokes, funny, humor. It's,
yeah.
Willy Esterhuizen made like Fekuk Paleis.
Okay.
Sort of that. And
yeah, yeah.
Corné Kuchelenberg's got quite a, it's like a bit of both. He's like a proper artist,
lovely.
But he wants to make movies about cricket.
Yeah.
So it's really something for the people.
Well, that's amazing. And what it's reminding me of is people describing the director Paul Thomas Anderson, who's made a bunch of like, you know, very serious, like Oscar-winning films, like, and some of the sort of more artistic stuff. And a few people have said they were going to be intimidated, or they felt intimidated going into an interview and then realized he's like a goofy dude.
Exactly. Exactly, dude.
But then why this is intriguing is because the silly comedies that get made often lack a heart.
Yes.
They often lack, and here's a great pretentious yes. Christian Olwagen word, but in Varsity, I remember them saying, like, what is the epistemological question?
Yes.
You know, what is that, like, deep, you know, core of the onion thing?
Yes.
And it's often not what you think. It's something deeper than that. Why do we do that? Why do we say that? Why do we want love? Why do we, you know, and if you can really get to the bottom of it and reveal it to the audience, there's a secret source.
That's it.
And you leave that movie going, why did that work so much better than I thought?
There's something that, exactly, like, there needs to be a kernel of truth somewhere.
You can't just be fucking stupid.
No, it falls flat. It's like God knows us. It's if you think of like great comedies over the years, there's always something in there which is like some universal truth or something that you can connect with, you know, or something that you love and stuff.
But you've got to be smart to understand that in your writing and in your directing. You've got to, a great example is Scrubs, the TV show Scrubs.
Oh, exactly.
Where
dude.
It would be ludicrously stupid, like dumb, absolutely dumb. And then they would just drop the floor from your feet and you would be in tears like a second later.
So, Corné, I often talk about this because he, I sound like I'm proper fanboying about him, but
that's lovely.
It is lovely, and the funniest thing is he's such a like a mensch, you know, at like a movie. Let's say there's a Silverskerm Fierce movie festival going on.
Yeah,
he'll be like, dude, this is making me shit anxious. Can you just come and hold my hand, bro? I can't. He's like such a real like just like oh shit, all these people. But anyways, in his writing, there's always a heart to it, and he'll downplay it. He'll always be like, "Oh no, we don't have to go deep, man." And then I'll be like, "Because I can go quite far I've got appreciation for both worlds.
Yeah, because you've done some serious stuff.
Serious stuff. And
what was the one that we screened at
the Viersens?
There's Viersens, which was like, yeah, lacquer indie arty.
Yes.
Cool. But Skjermersson?
Skjermersson, yes.
I mean, that was deep. Eh?
Yes, that was a deep ride. Yeah, that was a more sort of autobiographical. And so I can do the, I can appreciate
both,
the Christian and the Willy side, right?
Yeah.
And Corneille in his, we had like one or two scenes in the movie. I'll get back to the actual movie, Exit Perfection, which is coming out 9 August.
Yeah. So premiering. When this episode comes out, it's going to be tomorrow.
Yes. Showmax original. And, so I'd often speak to Corneille. We would go for coffee beforehand and he'll speak to me almost about like the DNA of the movie, right? What it feels like. What's the tone? And he'd give me references and he'd say, it's that kind of thing or that. And I sort of
what
get
was
it.
The tone? What were the references?
So it's somewhere between, there's definitely a sort of slightly wacky Anchorman-ish kind of
absurdism
to it. Then there is sort of a bit of a slapstick, lipstick, dipstick to it. But then there's something else.
Mm.
There's like, I won't go as far as to say Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but I mean, there's some sort of depth in it where it does actually explore, because there's also, his movies are often quite like real life inspired, and this one is as well. He was going through something and...
Because the thing is that there was a pattern,
yes,
as to why, because that's also an interesting question to ask in your own life if your current partner has lots of exes, which is, how did it all fucking end?
Exactly.
And why did it end? And then there's the interesting question, which is, why are you still friends with them? Which is a good thing in theory.
Yes, but what do you get
why
from
them?
Why
are they so close?
Exactly.
Is another question.
And am I going to become one of them? Is this worth it? Is it worth investing? Like, where, like, how do I fit in this? Am I just going to become a number eventually?
And what I love is, the older you get, the less time you waste.
Yes.
Where you're like, is this going to work?
Yes.
And I'll never forget, like, getting into later relationships in life where one or two of the women I was then with at the time said very clearly, they were like, are you in or you out?
Yeah.
Because I don't have time to waste. And then when I was like, I'm not sure. Okay, I respect this. Okay, let's not do this.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, that was quite cool.
Yes.
saved a bit of time.
Yes. Yes.
But it also reminds me of a conversation I did have with an ex where I realized that I am on good terms with everyone I've dated, which is also very interesting.
I'm envious of
you. And even the ones that ended in quite a lot of heartbreak.
Eventually.
I could have a coffee with them now.
Yes,
if I saw
I got
them.
You. I got
where
you.
Where she was like, delete the photos, burn the pictures. And I was like, that's...
Erase.
That's not good.
But that's the sort of main thematic question in the film is exes, friends with your exes. Is it viable or not?
Yeah.
And that explores that, and it's a very real thing in Corneille that he experienced.
Yeah.
And then there's comedy and love and choices and all these kinds of things around
it. It looks lovely.
And it's actually really funny.
And you're proud of it.
I'm very proud of it. Dude, I've been excited about it ever since we shot it.
Yeah.
It is, as I say, I really love it when, you know, I'm thinking of something random now, like Springboks winning the World Cup. Like, yes, Siya Kolisi and Andre Pollard are great, but there is a sense of like, it's all of our victory.
Yes.
Right? And what I enjoy of Corneille's movies and his sets and his productions is, it's not a mirror to show how brilliant artists we are. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, at stages in my life been like a bit all up in my ego, insecure and stuff, and be like, look, I'm cool, whatever. His work is like, here's something for you. You know, this
the audience.
It's a gift to the audience to enjoy. It's not, there's nothing about it.
It's not about how cool I am, how good I am.
And it's a subtle thing, but I think you do pick it up in stuff you do. There's nothing precious. Like, Anchorman has got the same vibe. Mm. It's just a random thing. There's nothing in Anchorman that says like, oh, this director is a real artist. This is going to be an Oscar winning movie. It just fucking is what it is. And it's like, this is yours.
I love the idea of it being a gift to the audience. And you hear people like Tom Cruise constantly talking about directing the scene or coordinating this action moment or this set piece about what the audience would want. 100%. Not about like how cool it is that I'm doing it. It's like, would the audience love this? And that's one of the reasons why he is the star he is because he's considering them.
100%, dude.
I'm thinking now about old Deadpool and Wolverine, which was like built for the big audience going, oh my God, look who's fucking coming around the corner.
Exactly.
Like, it's done for them. It's a present for the audience.
Dude, 100%.
And it's such a lovely payoff when it is that.
I think so too, and the audience can feel it. If they can, in a subconscious way, not to get like too esoteric about it.
No, but you can feel
it. But it's almost like when you indulge. I've been part of things like that as well, where it's like, look how cool my story about my fucking whatever is.
Yeah.
And then it's like it'll be a 7-minute long scene of like,
this is for me. I'm working through something here.
Exactly, and that can be really cool.
Yeah, totally.
But it's also like, oh, here's a glimpse into the narrator's mind.
Yeah.
Whereas other times it's like, dude, this is a gift for you. Have a joy.
Yeah, yeah. No, we took great joy in screening The Boy and the Heron this year, which is the latest Japanese animation from the godfather of Japanese animation, Miyazaki. He came out of retirement, won a Golden Globe and an Oscar. It is lacquer, weird anime in all its beautiful artistic glory. And after 2 hours, you're like, that was for him. That wasn't for me.
No, that was
like,
for him.
He had that in him. He wanted to get that out. I feel grateful for seeing it.
Yes. But once was enough.
What a lovely look into his mind. But that was not for me. That was for him.
I felt like, you know, remember that movie? Maybe I'm wrong in this, but there's often like deep art house movies that like some of them I really enjoy.
Mm.
And then some of them like Charlie Kaufman's work. Some of it I love. And then some of it I'm like, some of it I really love.
Yeah.
And then some of it, like, I remember, I think it was Synecdoche, New York or something.
Never seen it, but know of it. Yeah.
It was one of those where I'm like, yes, bro, you're taking us into somewhere here, which is cool, but it feels like so niche that I'm actually not part of this journey.
I feel like I'm sort of the third wheel in this conversation.
Yes, exactly.
Sort of having to explain why I'm here.
Yes, yes. The uninvited fly on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one thing to just be a fly, but to feel uninvited is another story.
Yeah.
You've wandered into our video store. Is there anything that you want to return? What have you watched recently that you've enjoyed?
What I watched recently, as I mentioned before the podcast, I'd like to be able to watch more movies and series, which sounds like a very odd thing to say.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the person that I am. I've got a great appreciation and enjoyment of it, and I'm part of that world.
Yeah.
But I think like people who can't sit still for 5 minutes and read, I've got a bit of that kind of vibe.
Okay.
So sometimes I find it hard to sit down and focus on something. But anyways,
Have you got that diagnosed? Do you take anything?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's
as long as you're looking after it.
That's a 4-hour podcast for me. That's not a gift for the audience. I won't take you guys into that.
No, as long as you're looking after it.
Yes.
Because
that's a boy in the heron kind of.
No, because ADD it's interesting and it manifests in different ways. And I'm understanding it from talking to people in these moments where people think it's a concert still, but it also is a deep concentration when you do have it, hey?
I don't have ADHD, but I've got something on that sort of in
it's
that
a spectrum.
Spectrum.
It is
in
a spectrum.
That ballpark.
That's why they use that word. Yeah,
exactly. So, but to answer you, I listen to a shitload of podcasts.
Because you can do other things at the same time.
Yes. But I actually recently watched. I do enjoy documentaries as well. I recently watched a documentary. I'm going to watch some Olympics with my dad soon, not at the Olympics, but just visit him in Cape Town. And he said crucial preparation for the Olympics is I've got to watch a documentary on Netflix called Sprint, which is like about the fastest people
so
in the world.
Good.
Have you seen?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
And we've been saying to folks, like, you have to watch this now.
Yes,
so that
dude,
when you watch the sprinting,
it's got
these are characters you now know.
Like, dude, Marcel Jacobs and Noah Lyles
is so interesting.
Dude, he's a movie star.
Yeah.
He's a rock and roll freaking larger than life dude. And if I just saw him there, you won't have the payoff. You'll be like, oh, this is quite a flamboyant dude.
He looks arrogant.
He looks arrogant. But if you watch this, you're like, this guy's on a mission.
Yeah,
this
guy
is on a big mission.
And there's moments within the series where you see his vulnerability and you see where it comes from and you see why he's doing some of the showmanship that he is.
He's got a bigger narrative and his family and like, yeah. I think there's, yes, 100%. So Sprint was really
Sprint
cool.
Sprint is cool. Yeah, and also there's the Simone Biles.
Yes.
It's like there's two episodes of hers, and then they say next episode's coming in September because of August or September, because they're obviously going to be filming Paris, yes. And then those are going to make up episodes post Olympics. But yeah, that also helps you understand who these people are.
And it's like, it's always interesting when you like knock on the door of not a subculture, but something that you don't really know a lot about. And you open the door, you see through the window and you realize this is a whole massive world. Yeah. It's almost like gaming. Yeah. You know, if you're not into gaming, my dad will think, oh, people play computer games. Like,
no, bro.
Yeah, like gaming is massive. There's money in it. It's like a huge world. And like having a glimpse into athletics and that competitiveness and the mental strength. I was watching some documentaries also about like reading up about Michael Phelps and like now Caleb Dressel. And these guys, some of them often like burn out after Olympics with depression and stuff. There's all kinds of shit into it because it's a... Dude, to perform at that level is, it's intense.
It's wild. No, and there was one little nugget that came in Sprint, which I think is about six episodes. On Netflix. And one of the trainers said, it's 90% brain. Yes. You know, it's 90% in your head. You know, they can all run fast.
Yes.
That there's no question. These are just bodies that have been trained and also a good old natural gift.
Yes.
That they have the muscle composition, you know, whatever. Some people just can't do it. But it's 90% like what's in your head. That's and how you get off that starting block in the first like microsecond of that race.
There's like, any doubt is split as like half a bit of a time reduction. So it's like, I remember that... Sorry, I'm talking shitloads now.
This is the point.
Yes, this is the point. Remember that Michael Jordan, it was a documentary.
Yeah, The Last Dance. Yeah.
And I remember this as well. Now you're speaking of like a kernel of truth or something that sticks with you. I remember them saying, what makes Michael so good? And obviously there's like loads of reasons.
Yeah, well, because he's not the tallest.
He's not the tallest. And maybe like on a 100-meter sprint, there was probably athletes that are faster than him, et cetera. And they said the most interesting thing, and I remember it so well because they were filming such clever editing.
Yeah.
Like, he was walking out. It was like part of the documentary where they see him walking out into like the Chicago Bulls arena or their stadium, and he was walking through the hallway from the changing rooms and his team, you know, as sports players get into there. And it was like the people around him, the security guards and stuff, were like, you know, what's up, Mike? Or like, go and smash him or whatever. And he would like smile, but he would like nod, and he would like say, how's it to someone? And then he'd zone a bit, whatever, but he'd just sort of cruise calmly. And the guy said that what made him different is he was the only person that at any stage was always 100% present wherever he was. So when he was in the hall and he was like saying, how's it? He was slapping the guy a handshake and be like, what's up, my brother? And then he left. He wasn't always like necessarily the nicest.
Yeah.
But he could.
He was there.
He was there. So when he was standing in front of the hoop and he had to take a 3-pointer, he could shut out everything and it was just him in the hoop and he was in his backyard.
Amazing.
And he could
just be
there. Yeah, I know. It's cool, dude.
Shit. Also, part of that, you realize later in life, also comes with perhaps not being that smart.
Can be.
So I don't know. He maybe is a smart dude. So I'm not talking about Michael Jordan. But in general.
Not to overthink.
Good athletes, a little bit like musicians sometimes, can be lovely, amazing, charismatic, beautiful, loving people, but just maybe not that smart.
It's almost like
where maybe not a lot is going on in their head.
It's like,
so that they can just think about catching the football or shooting the thing.
Yeah.
I think I had a bit, and I'm not saying I'm smart, but I'm saying I think I had a bit too much brain activity to skateboard, for example. Dude. I had an imagination where I could imagine what it could be like to break my collarbone.
Dude,
I never did that shit.
I was the same. Like, I'm clumsy, but I've got decent ball skills. But I was like that, you know, primary high school rugby.
Yeah.
I was scared on the field because there was too much questioning going on in my head.
Yeah.
It was like doubting, oh shit, what about this? What about this pain? Whatever. And it's like, dude, shut up and go
for it. The best rugby players are probably just like, man, smash. Like, do it. Oh, lovely. Let's take a little journey.
Yes.
Where did we grow up?
Actually, Eastern Cape, PE, now Gqeberha.
Nice. Good pronunciation.
Thank you, dude. I've been doing Zulu lessons for a few years.
I think there was a point when that name change came and a whole bunch of white people were like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, fuck. What is it? Yeah, let's just go step by step here.
Some people just say GQ.
Yeah. That helps.
Yeah.
Okay, so Eastern Cape.
Eastern Cape, first few years.
Okay.
Went to an English, Jewish English pre-primary school. So actually.
Interesting.
My brother was in Grey PE and, what if they're called Grey GQ now? But anyway. Yeah.
I'm going to find it interesting. Carry
okay,
on.
Cool. No, so I'm was born in an Afrikaans family. All of us are, you know, my dad and Beyers, son Piet Beyers.
Yeah.
But my brother went to Grey and I went to Theodor Herzl and most of our friends were English. So my brother and I, for like the first 6 years of our lives, I think we predominantly spoke English to each other. Like that was when our mates were around, we were just speaking English.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Cape Town and I went to, from Theodor Herzl to Jan van Riebeeck, which is like the most Afrikaans colonialist, the name.
Yeah, yeah.
And then grew up in Cape Town, primary school, high school, and then studied at Stellenbosch.
Once you moved to Cape Town, were you speaking more Afrikaans?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, then it was 100% Afrikaans all the
way. Was it an issue that you maybe had a bit of a English accent? Or?
No. I remember one of my guys in the class kept on saying like, one of my friends kept on saying like, why do I say Audi? It's Audi. For the car. And I was like, shit, isn't it Audi? They're like, nee, it's Audi. Okay,
shit. Is it?
Yeah, exactly. So
Audi. You know, then there's the way that the Germans pronounce it.
Which is, yeah.
It's like, it's not BMW, it's BMW.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, interesting.
Exactly.
Whatever. Who gives a shit?
Yes, exactly. So. And
okay.
Then, yeah.
But growing up, was there a movie that you remember being like a big significant...
Yes.
We call this the puppy love film.
Yes. I'd say, there were two. So when I was very young, I'm talking about like 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
I was quite a big reader when I was young. Like,
that's good.
Yeah. I was.
And what were you reading? English or Afrikaans? Dull.
No, English. Mostly, predominantly. It wasn't exclusively English or anything. It just happened to be like Roald Dahl was mostly in English.
Sure.
And I remember watching the movie version of Matilda.
Oh, cool.
And
with that DeVito.
Danny DeVito, exactly, dude. And the South African actress, actually, what's her name? She was played Miss Honey.
Was she South African? Honey.
She is South African.
Oh.
I actually have got friends who recently worked with her on a movie. What's her name? Embeth Davids.
Okay.
Yes.
Because you leave that like in love with her.
Yes.
Like
yes.
in the most beautiful, tender
yes.
way.
Yes. Like a super endearing,
where
sweet.
Where you're like, oh my God, she is literally
an,
like,
angel.
An angel. Yeah.
And I remember that Matilda. And then a few years later, my mom and dad and I. But I think, you know, sometimes movies also hit in specific times in your life. It's
totally.
When you're there, it's like having a beer in Mozambique tastes different than having a beer in your whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
A dojem.
Yes.
It tastes just like any other commercial lager, but it hits different.
It hits different, dude, when you're on the,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So my mom and my dad and myself, we went to watch The Truman Show.
Okay.
In the waterfront. I remember I was like 12 or 13. Mm. And I remember that being having a massive impact on me in a good way.
Yeah.
It was quite an existential awakening.
Yeah.
And
so maybe we living in a simulation,
yes.
starting to think about our lives. And
yeah, I'm assuming you've seen it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've been quite a Jim Carrey sort of enthusiast or follower ever since.
I think at the time that Truman Show came out, it was him flexing his chops a bit more. Because I think he'd been quite silly up until that point.
Yes.
With Ace Ventura and The Mask and Dumb and 100%. Dumber. And this was him going like, there's a bit more to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. He actually said in some interview, he said like the movies he were in mostly reflected the sort of mental space or the time in his life.
Mm.
Like when he was at a place where he would love to just go on comedy shows, jump off the stairs, he would get Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Then when he was doing a bit more self-reflection in his personal life, it was almost like he, not saying a law of attraction, but he would go for the auditions for the slightly whatever more roles. And obviously he went quite on a journey and like to, what's it, Jim and Andy, that thing on, I don't know if you saw that documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, when he did Man on the Moon, which was the biopic of Andy Kaufman.
The comedian.
He went deep.
Dude, he's been on a cosmic journey.
Yeah.
Like someone that did fucking ayahuasca for breakfast for fucking a month.
Yeah.
But anyways, dude, so
okay.
And then some crowd favorites, Gladiator and
cool.
Scent of a Woman.
Okay.
With Al Pacino.
Yeah. I remember that one.
And then there's some more. I think Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Those are the biggies. But yeah. I think that would have come to you a bit later.
That was a bit later.
Okay, so now we're in Afrikaans High School.
Yes.
In Cape Town.
Yeah.
Had you started acting at this point?
Yeah. I started acting.
What kind of dude were you in high school?
Oh, fuck, dude. Oh, dude.
So you had some ball skills. So you played a little bit of rugby, but you stayed out of the rucks.
Yeah, I was
a little
lock.
Bit like me.
Yes, I was played lock. So I was quite tall,
okay.
But I was scared on the field, dude. Like,
yeah, no, I was too. I didn't fit in there.
So I've always been I've always had like a thing where I appreciate. I love sport.
Yeah, sure.
And I've always felt a bit like an outsider in the inside gang. So,
yeah.
or inside in the outside gang or whatever.
I know
but
what
like,
you mean, yeah.
I'm not one of the boykies, but I still play five-a-side football every week with like guys that are
okay.
proper, like, you know, they're just like, I'll say almost like a bit more macho than I am. But I love the sport and I love the guys and whatever. It's a cool vibe. So at school, I was a bit confused, dude.
I think this is maybe why, even in our brief little connections, you and I felt a kinship because I think we share a very similar sense of manhood.
Probably,
where
dude.
It's like
there's a goof. There's a
yeah. We don't quite fit in. We're not the boy cheese.
No, dude. We're not. Yeah. It's like
bit more sensey.
Yes, 100%. And you know what the thing is when you're young, like when I was young, now I just like.
I'm confident enough to say whatever I want.
I own my skin, whatever. I'm in my skin, cruel, like a. But when I was young, you often overcompensate for shit. So I was like actually super sensitive.
Mm.
But when one girl, you know, in primary school, high school noticed me, suddenly I felt like, oh shit, now I've got to be cool. And then I overcompensated so hard to try and be like alpha male.
That wasn't the guy she fell in love with. Yeah.
Dude, it was so not me. So so my whole high school was one fucking massive act of trying to be cool. You know, it was like trying to be badass and whatever. And, so I think acting, I eventually found like there was, you know, drama or play at school. And
I was
like,
did you do the school plays?
I was like, okay, it's probably not the coolest thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. I played tennis and stuff, and that was kind of okay. It's got a bit of street cred being in this tennis teams or swimming and stuff. And acting was like, oh, dude, you know, this real softies only guys that do acting.
Or you could nail it out the park and be popular. It depends.
It depends.
But you're in a different world, yeah.
So I was like a popular dick. Not a dick, but I mean like, I was like kind of in a way popular, but not necessarily always liked.
Okay.
You know, so
why were you not liked?
Because I was an attention. I realized it the other day. I think like taking it a bit deep, like our family also went through some weird times when moving to Cape Town, and our family kind of separated.
Okay.
And then everyone sort of went on their own missions. And I think I was looking for attention. So I was like, from somewhere in primary school when this stuff started happening, I was like, I've got to hold on to something. And then when I was seen somewhere at school for something, I was like, I'm going to double down on this shit now to feel like something. And then I went deep. So a bit of an attention seeker.
That is a solid quality trait of an actor.
I suppose. I'd like to
think. That tracks.
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to think it's got a more, like when I was super young, first few years, I think it had a wholesome way of coming out.
Yeah.
I'd enjoy the tension, but I'd love to other people to have a good time and them to feel lekker and whatever.
Yeah,
and then I think it went through a weird time.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's better now, but
because here you are making this kind of movie where
for other people.
You've come out the other side and you're making this
stuff. Yeah. Full circle. But there was one more thing I wanted to say now that you indulging me, thank you, in my life story. Just as an example. Here's an example.
Yeah.
We had these like awards at our school. You know, there's like some schools, well, there's like Rugby Player of the Year. Mm. And then there's like, we had like the unofficial awards.
Yeah, like the sort of fun.
Yes, that the kids vote for.
Yeah.
All the kids in the school.
What did you get?
Dude, I was in grade 8, standard 6.
Okay.
And I think I was on 3 lists. There were these lists come out and people vote and shit, whatever. And the first list I see, I'm in grade 8. I think I was like 1 of 2 people in grade 8 or something that was on the list. I got Windgat of the school in grade 8.
What's a Windgat? Sorry, pardon my...
Windgat is like arrogant.
Oh, shit.
Windgat means like you think you're the shit. Dude, okay. I got that in grade 8, 13, 14 years old. So that...
Did it take the Wind out of you?
No, but that's... Do you
know or did it give you more?
Do you know what's the saddest part? I looked at it and I'm like, hell yeah. Now you see me. That's the saddest part. So I've been through quite a, I think with like later on suffering in life a bit with the spectrum stuff.
Okay. And life
humbled the fuck out of me. Good. So now I'm back to 5 year old, back to 5 year old humility.
Lovely. Was there a film in high school you remember being like a very kind of high school film? Exi Perfexi's this raunch comedy. Was there perhaps those kinds or? How old are you now?
36. Okay. Just turned 36.
I'm a few years older than you.
39.
Yeah, going to be 39 soon.
So there were a few like, you know, seminal classic teen films that I also connected with, whether it was like, I always had a bit of a romantic side in me. So I'd quite enjoy the ones that had a bit more of a romance story in it. Mm. Like, fucking 10 Things I Hate About You or Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
I also enjoyed the American Pie kind of vibes. Were, I think that's, Exi Perfexi lives slightly in the American Pie.
Yeah.
There's touch points.
Yeah.
And then I did, at high school, I did enjoy horrors.
Okay. Like,
I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scream.
Okay.
Those kind of commercial blockbusters.
Yeah, the sort of slasher horror.
The slasher horrors. And then I think...
Talk about something made for the audience. I mean, those were done solely to have you shout at the cinema screen.
Exactly. Like, the Scream Mask talking on a phone is such an iconic... Oh, dude, you know what also made a big impact on me? And I think also, it's often like who introduces you to certain things. Like, I listened to a lot of music. My brother listened to at high school.
Yeah.
Because he was 5 years older, so he was the cool guy. And whatever, I molded my vibe around his.
Classic.
Even though it wasn't really who I am. I loved his vibe, but it's him. And they were very, very much like punk rock scene, my brother and them. So we were like trying to be that, but actually Goody Two-Shoes was a weird vibe. Sure. But he introduced me to some cool movies. And I remember like early high school, he showed me Terminator 2.
Okay.
And that was so epic. Like there was, I know it's like there's a bit cheesy or whatever.
No, no.
But dude,
in its time, it was.
And Matrix, of course.
Yes.
Matrix was. Yeah. So I've got quite a commercial palette.
Yeah.
In a way.
No, we like, all do. Yeah.
Sometimes on my way here, I was like, should I say my favorite movies? Like, but blue is the warmest color. Itu Mama Tambien or whatever. Which is all cool.
Yeah.
But. I think I'm not so sophisticated movie wise often.
No, but there was a great what was it? There was something that Ryan Gosling said where he's like, "Yeah, I want to say it's that you know these kinds of movies," and he sort of quoted a few or Citizen Kane, but he's like, "It's actually Step Brothers."
Exactly.
So that's a very natural thing, you know. No, especially if you then went on to make these fun comedies, and you know, so they all come from somewhere, and it's great.
I know we're going on this my sort of cinematic relationship journey on the moment, and that's beautiful. But just out of interest, did you go to school in Joburg?
Yeah, Joburg, okay. Born and raised.
Where did you go to school?
Branston.
Okay, what kind of kid were you in high school?
A little similar to you,
really?
Also just in the sense that I was kind of something for everyone. My good friends at the start of high school, by matric, were first team rugby guys. So I had that sort of access in the sense that like I was with them and they were my friends. But I could not be that kind of dude. I had a very good sense that my glory days were still to come.
Yeah, it was like somewhere in you.
Yeah, and I've spoken about it on the show before. There was a sort of rainy afternoon where I was like, what the fuck am I doing on a rugby field? Yeah. I was like, I play in a band.
Yeah.
You know, so I was also playing in bands and starting this whole thing. I was writing songs for girls, you know. Yes. So I was like, I was a sensei in that sense.
What, listening to Green Day?
Yeah.
Yes. So I was someone for... I think in my spirit, I was someone for everyone, but I acted like I was someone for no one.
Okay.
But which is interesting because I think like...
But I don't think I was the Windhut by any means.
No.
I wasn't that. Maybe we don't share that. But yeah.
I think in a different life, or if things were a bit more straightforward in my life, I would have taken that path. That's what I would have liked to take, your path. That's a cool, that's sort of in the spirit. But
I think also what's slowly set in, which I spoke about the other day with my fiance, is that I'm not afraid to go, what does that word mean?
Exactly.
And oh no, I've never seen that.
Yeah.
You know, and then the cinephiles around me, even though I own a fucking cinema, some go, you haven't seen that? And I was like, I haven't, bro. I haven't. So... Let's watch it. Should I watch it?
Dude, it's...
Like, I've covered most bases, but, you know... And I've also, you know, I'm now going back and reading a lot of the books that, like, you know, one should read.
Yes.
And, you know, so I'm getting to that kind of stuff now. But I'm confident enough to go, hey, haven't seen that one. Don't know what that word means, you know. And that's, I think, relatively unique.
I love that. That's like, to me, there's few things less... comforting and engaging than a comfortable outsider. And that, like, a comfortable outsider to me is actually like a proper insider in a weird way, like, because if you are who you are, you give me permission for me to be who I am. And then I'm like, oh, bro, I don't know this. You don't know that. Sweet. Let's go for who gives a shit?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely gives an air of unpretentiousness, which I think is important. And I think a lot of art, you come to realize, is shrouded in this mystery on purpose. A lot of our lives are shrouded in mystery. We talked about it the other day that, you know, a personal trainer, for example, will make it seem very complex so that you pay them to unlock the complexity. It's not that fucking hard, bro. Lift weights. Eat properly, sleep, get sunshine, you know?
It's
like, don't overdo the calories and like keep your body moving.
It's at the same time it's complex and super simple.
Yeah. But it's like VAT. I don't know whether you've ever had much to do with it.
I don't understand. I wish we did tax at school. I've got fucking no idea.
Just for me as a small business owner, something like VAT is so painfully simple and so painfully complex at the same time.
Yes. Yes.
Anyways,
you know what, right? And I've got a tendency to often turn conversations into slight therapy sessions for both of us.
That's what it's all about. Yeah,
it is. And I want to actually ask you something about you as well, again. But you know what, Nat? About the art and I've got a friend. I worked at an ad agency for 4 years after studying acting at Stellenbosch.
Oh, cool! I did that too. Oh, just
really?
For 1 year. Yeah.
Yes. And that was a cool experience. I remember the boss of the ad agency saying, like, he wants to make things for – he wants to bring the art class and the rugby field together. Yeah. And, like, I remember, like, divisions at school. Like, you know, these were the hockey guys. These were the this, blah, 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 all of that. And I know what I used to – like, it was a big realization in my life. This is sort of related to what we're talking about. We can marry it to like movies and stuff now. Is I think I used to feel like, you know, at high school you maybe had like that feeling of your best years were to come. Like you've got value somewhere in you, but it's not necessarily being projected on the sports field right now or in the maybe a bit in this class or that class or whatever. Yeah. Maybe it's social. And I remember I had this weird sort of relationship with my ego. It was like, when will the world discover the fucking secret, hidden cellar magic in me that I actually really am, right? It was almost like there was almost like a bit of a slight arrogance, but also a bit
confident?
Of a, no. Okay. Like insecure arrogance, but a misunderstood like sadness. Where I don't, misunderstood kind of vibe. And then it took me quite a while to connect with life and people and realize like everyone's got their their strengths, weaknesses, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then I realized I was always like, where will this magical, amazing platform be where that'll recognize me? And then it took me so long, like I was a Jordan, partied and all kinds of shit. And then it took me so long to realize, like, what about instead of waiting for the goodness to see me, what if about if I just try and rather be a bit of goodness?
Okay.
Like,
nice little click.
Yeah, it's such a simple thing. But like, what if I'm trying to be the magic ingredient rather than waiting for the magic platform to recognize me?
Yeah.
And it sounds whatever, but it was just
that's,
like...
that's fundamental.
And it literally started by, like, if I had one, could change one thing differently, it would be when I went to school to say hi to people. Just basically to recognize the other, what's not you.
Mm.
And that was quite a big thing for me, because then you start seeing value and beauty all around you, whether it's in movies, different kinds of movies, different kinds of music, different kinds of sports, different kinds of people, you know? So anyways.
No, that's lovely. Can I tell you my little pearl, which
Please, dude.
On a relatively similar level.
Please.
I found an author called Douglas Copeland, who was quite a smart, quite geeky author that would often write quite a similar book, but really these books for the ages. So there was one called Generation X, which was about the sort of Microsoft McDonald's era. Then there was one called J-Pod, Microsurfs. And it's all this main character is a man. It's about his relationship with his friends and the world. And it was often these books... sometimes we just have pages that are just thoughts about his life and quotes and things. Yes. And it's sort of this sort of brain farting.
Yes.
And there was one quote that just fucking hit me. It hit me like a ton of bricks. And it was around varsity, late high school varsity, similar to you, which was, if you can't make yourself useful to society, it's your fault, not society's. And this fucking hit me. So you're talking about magic and love and talent and being found. For me, it was like, oh, you've got to be useful.
You've got to add. You're not got to wait. It's like you think there's somewhere in you that's like, no, I must take. They must be useful to me. And then it's like, no, wait a second.
Yeah.
If I can be useful to them, let's see how it goes.
And I've looked at other people across my life now where I'm like, even if you just... even if you can't find work, are you helping at the SPCA?
Exactly.
Are you cooking your partner nice food? Are you giving them love? Are you doing anything?
In life, are you adding a plus?
Yeah.
Anywhere.
No, and there's I'm certainly not going to name names, but there's one or two characters where I've said to people in my life, like, this guy's useless. What is he doing?
Yes.
What is he doing with his life?
Yes.
Like, literally.
And especially when there's people with lots of potential.
Like, yeah, sure.
Like, you get people that are, yes, dude, we've got a security guard that works in the, in the boomed off section in the road we're living. Sipo. Dude, that guy, I'm sure he doesn't earn a lot of money, but dude, the amount of, I'm sure he's got his challenges.
Yeah.
But the plus and the respect and love and value and use and usefulness that he adds to the world just by greeting everyone, speaking to everyone, knowing their name, talking to them, shows you that, like, it's not about society's platform. It's about what you bring.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'll be recognized, going back to Sprint, Noah Lyles or whatever. I'm sure he didn't start as a hero, but he was like, fuck this, dude. I've got something to give and I'm going to make it useful. Yeah. I'm going to bring it. I'm going to show it.
I also remember one point in Short Straw where Tom, the guitarist, said something like, you really have to show up, even if you're hungover.
Yeah.
Like, you might, you know, you're not fucking, you're not the world's most famous band, but in this moment, you got this gushing little fan who's getting a picture with you. Like, no matter what's going on, you got to, like, literally swallow your hangover, put on a smile, because this is...
It's for them.
It's for them. And, like, you got to do something for them. But being useful is key. And I think about that all the time with the Bioscope. I think all about that with Limited Edition, with the podcast, with everything. It's about, like, are you filling a gap? Are you being useful? Are you helping someone? Are you...
But, dude, just as sounds like a gushy compliment, but it's true. But I can see it in who you are. Just the way that you welcome people. Like, people pick it up in the work that you do, but also just, like, one's demeanor.
Yeah.
It's a way of being open to life and people, and it permeates through everything one does.
Yeah, lovely, man. Okay, so we studied at Stellenbosch.
Stellenbosch, studied drama, studied acting.
Real flopsy buddy.
Oh, dude. Did we all of it?
Were there ever points, I did a little bit of performance, where you're sort of lying on the floor singing or breathing and going,
what the fuck?
Someone on this campus or not too far away is like pulling their hair out with engineering. And
Here
I am going, mama.
Dude, the funny thing was, after high school, once I went through my arrogant sort of don't know who I am period, I opened my eyes.
Okay.
And then I became very real.
Okay.
Friendly, but real. Okay. So I was like, I know I'm not in the forefront of finding the cure for cancer.
Yeah.
I'm lying on the floor in my black tracksuit, pretending to be doing a movement piece called Eternal Cosmos.
Flopsy Body,
and I do my experimental piece there. But a few of my mates and I would also be like, dude.
Yeah, let's wank it up.
Wank it up. And they'll be like, can you please travel toward that side of the room? This was actually terminology. Can you please travel to that side of the room? And I'll be like, do you mean just walk? And they're like, yeah, travel. I'm like, okay, we can call it travel. And I just like walk there and they'd be like, oh, nice.
So I'd
wank it up quite a bit. we would hang out in the mystic pur.
But this is the beautiful thing that we're talking about, which is like knowing the tools.
Yes.
But making this fun comedy, that's where it comes from, is knowing the level of pretentiousness and playing with it.
And knowing where you are. It's like at high school, just to go back to that, I was in a punk rock band, the worst fucking band of all time.
Every punk rock band is the worst band.
But this band was like, when the audience reacted, it was only booze. And we had like, we were very disliked.
What did you do in the band?
I tried to play guitar.
That's what every punk rock guitarist does. They also just try to play guitar.
Yeah, but that's true. That's true. Yeah, this is all true. And I'm sure everyone feels like this.
Okay, what was your cool band name?
Saag My Grasperk.
Okay, what does that translate to?
Mow My Lawn. And we had like, after one song, everyone was dead quiet and one guy from the audience just shouted, Saag My Ore Af, which means mow off my ears.
Oh, lovely.
So, but we were all attitude, like zero talent, all attitude. But what I wanted to say is that I would be in that and not play rugby anymore because I'm trying to be like my brother and a skater and a punk rocker. But I would wake up Saturday mornings early and watch like Super 12 rugby.
Yeah.
You know, and not really tell everyone. So when the rugby guys in class were talking about like rugby, they'd be like, how the fuck does PT know about the Hurricanes and Eden Park and where that, whatever. So I often find that like humanity sits. It sits in the cracks, right? Between all the, like, there's a few walls, there's four walls around, and in the middle, if you stand from outside and you look through the cracks of the four different walls, you're all going to see the middle.
Yeah.
And whatever's in the middle, that's where the magic happens, right? Oh,
that's a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, the fundamentals of especially your high school era is just wanting to fit in.
Yeah.
So there's a handful of kids that will do everything to just look the same and be the same. And God help them if they're too tall or too fat or too, not attractive or whatever. But then there's a handful of kids that go, I desperately want to be completely different.
Yes.
And that's also like a weird thing. And that could be out of lots of confidence or out of absolutely no confidence.
Exactly, dude. So, to get back to it, studied acting at Stellenbosch. My mom actually taught acting at the drama department at Stellenbosch. So I didn't want to go and study because then it's like, oh, my teachers, my mom or whatever. So I went to study something else. And then I was sitting in an economics class and I was like, I don't know if my mind's going to be able to take this in right now.
Okay. But your mom was a drama lecturer.
She was a drama and she is an actress. She's an Afrikaans actress. But they sort of wangled it that we never had anything to do with each other while I was there. So okay. we would go for lunch every once a month or whatever. And we have a really amazing relationship. But at the same time, when we were at the department, we were like distant pro. It was how's it? Bye. We were, so people, it was like a non thing.
Okay.
But dude, when we got into the movement room, then I was going flopsy body, experimental, Michel Gondry times a million.
Yeah, I was, you know what I mean. Because was that her discipline?
Yes. So
okay. And you wanted to do good for her?
I grew up, my high school, I spent most of the time in my mom's house.
Okay.
And she used to act and still acts and stuff. And I think understanding a bit of that and getting comfortable with that helped me find who I am. Because I was like, okay, wait a second. I just felt sort of comfortable in this is a space where I don't have to be this kind of person. I can just like be flawed, whatever. And then doing some plays and stuff, I was like, I enjoy this. And it wasn't like I want to follow in her footsteps or make her proud. I do want to make her proud, but it wasn't necessarily that. It was more like this is somewhere where I feel like I can add value and that
Where
I can be useful. Exactly. Where I can be useful.
Yeah. It's lovely. Yeah.
So, I studied acting and I never wanted to act. I had problems on my spectrum vibes I was talking about. So it was a weird thing and I still have that in certain ways. Like I knew this is what I wanted to do, but live performance freaked me out.
Okay.
So it was a weird thing. And then
okay, so perhaps theater is not your thing, but film acting.
Yes. It's
a bit more possible.
The theater thing was my thing and I think it's going to become my thing again.
Okay.
I just had to go for a walk. Take the long way around.
It's a very particular thing to do a theater and we've had a few musical theater folk visit the video store. And you realize like just how crazy it is. Because the one thing we can touch on is the fact that you had this window to shoot Exi Perfexi, and it just so happened that in that window you got horribly fucking sick.
Did you know about it? How did I tell you?
I saw a press release that got put out from the multi-choice people, and I read that to just get a better sense of this film. And I know that feeling where you're like, I can't do this any other time. I can't postpone this. No. We don't have the luxury of doing it. I've got to be useful now, but I'm fucking sick.
Dude, it was like, I was afraid to mention it in the article because I remember like at some stage quite a few years ago, it was like, if you have COVID, you can't pitch up on set or go to work or whatever. I'm pretty sure I had like there were a few mutations of COVID and whatever, but I definitely had COVID or like all the original symptoms of like original COVID.
Sure.
And I had COVID way back. But this was like that, and it was worse. And then I had to do like running scenes and dancing scenes, chasing scenes. The one actor, Yuan Yubad, who's a delight, bro. Yeah. This guy's like from Boerland Landbo School in Wellington in South Africa. I think it's Wellington. But anyways, he's like one of the best actors I've met, but like minus 5,000 on the pretentious scale.
Mm-hmm.
And he studied acting, but he's cock funny, dude. His character's name is Harry. He's one of the exes.
Yeah.
And we had to do like running scenes. And dude, I can't even stand up from out of the bed, but we've got to shoot this scene today. Like everyone is organized. We've only got this. Cameras are hired. The people are hired. Got to pitch up. I've got to be useful today, right now.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a diva. I've been enough of that in my life. Like I'm not that anymore. Now I'm trying to be useful, right? So I'm like, if they say, dude, we got to do this, I'm like, you know, cleaning my throat, fucking trying to down three. So it was mad. But we had a scene that's like, if people watch the movie, they'll see it's like it's almost like a fever dream. So it's a, and
I read this, carry on.
Yeah. It's like this scene where he starts almost hallucinating. The exes are part of his life. So the pitch up everywhere from the, like from the start, it's like, okay, so this is your friend. Oh, what? He used to be your boyfriend. Okay, then that's fine. And then the movie sort of unfolds and it becomes like this romance, but like this anti-romance almost, but like, what the fuck is going on? And they're sort of almost swarming him and it becomes almost like absurdist horror elements to it.
Mm.
And then
you acted the fuck out of that scene.
Dude, there was this.
Because you were having an actual fever dream.
It felt like a malaria fever dream.
Wow.
And we were in there and they would all pitch up and they're like, hey, dude, how is it? And it was like this. And Corneille, the director, said it actually worked because they were worried.
Like,
wow,
you're really nailing the scene.
They were like, dude, I'm so glad you were sick in that scene.
Yeah.
Because I look out of it. Yeah. And I was out of it.
Wild. Oh, it's making me think of a trip I did earlier this year to Iceland.
What?
Iceland.
Reykjavik. Is that
Reykjavik? Reykjavik's the capital. It's probably one of the most expensive places in the world because it is just so isolated. It's just this, you know, this beautiful little block of, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, there was like a casual cheeseburger that was like 400 rand when you do the maths. And it's just because, you know, they can only grow so much on the island and everything. But halfway through this trip, that was probably one of the most expensive personal trips I've done in my life. This is me and the now fiance. I got also horribly sick.
Oh, dude.
And but it's funny, like weird little moments of adrenaline kick in where you're doing something magical, like when we walked over this glacier and you actually can get as warm as you can. So it wasn't that much of a problem. But Jesus, there was times when I was like, oh my God, like no, of all the days I could be sick. It's like, why are we doing it on this? You know, I'm losing out on my experience.
And was it, did you go for holiday?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was like a sort of 6 day, 7 day trip.
It's part of Europe, right?
Yeah, it's technically part of the EU. But I mean, my God, is it on its own up there in the middle of nowhere?
Dude,
it's beautiful. It was so beautiful. But it was just
Murphy's
one of those,
yeah.
Like, of course, your body goes like, hey, we're getting sick now. And you're like, fuck you.
Exactly.
But there's nothing you can do. It's a little bit like you on set. It's yes, like, I can't pull out. I can't delay this.
No,
I can't.
You can't. But dude,
you just got to be in the moment.
100%, dude. 100%. Iceland.
Yeah.
So just to get to the Exi Perfexi, because I know, obviously, we've talked quite a bit about it.
Yeah.
But I really get excited now in my life, and I can see you, like, just once again, visiting the bioscope for various different events. Like when I visit the bioscope, I know I'm getting something out of the night because you make it lacquer for me.
Yeah,
right? You guys make it like a gift to the people who come here, the customer.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's important for me now, the useful part. And what makes me excited is that I am an enthusiastic audience member with Exi Perfexi. I'm not, when I look at the trailer, I'm like, dude, this is lacquer. And I almost, often I'm like, oh yes, am I good in this? Am I not good? There's often like an egoic part in stuff you do, especially with something like this where your face is on screen, where you're like, you can easily be like, do I look good enough? Do I look, you know, do I have a double chin or whatever? But this movie, it's all irrelevant to me because I know the geus is bigger than the detail.
Oh, lovely, man.
Yeah, dude. Oh,
no, I'm happy for you. One of our last things is the film you could marry. This is like your kind of all-time favorites. Do you have any ones that you can think of the top of your head? It's quite interesting.
Favorite movies?
Yeah, the ones that you can kind of always come back to.
Yes, dude. The previous ones I've mentioned, I will let this be the answer.
Yeah.
when I
can be stepbrothers.
Yeah. Dude, when I like have a hard time sleeping at night, or I just like lie around, you know, YouTube, whatever, got earphone in my ear, whatever. When I really feel like I need some inspiration in life, or just a little bit of motivation, or just like I'm feeling a bit lost, I type into YouTube Gladiator final scene, and I watch, or final fight scene.
Okay.
And I fucking watch where there's a part of me that's attracted to sort of a very basic heroic rise. You know, earlier I was reading something about Her, the movie Her, Spike Jonze, I loved.
That's my movie, funny enough, where every time I watch it, I feel quite creatively inspired.
Yes, dude.
It's visually, like his style, the color.
That pink, that
it's
aesthetic.
That ready pink. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, so in a way, that to me is beautiful. I've got like a connection with that sort of aesthetic, but I'm not necessarily the most aesthetic person, but just the tone, that feel. It's almost like a...
It's like a weird, warm, orangey, pinky.
Pinky. I love like hopeful nostalgia. Like a romantic nostalgia.
Yeah.
I've got a spirit that connects with that.
Yeah.
And then I've got the appreciation for the sort of almost simple just heroic rise. Which is not necessarily how I live, but I like to live in that world for a while.
But there's such a simple vengeance to that final scene in Gladiator. You're talking about the one where he kills Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes, dude.
And it's because
Release my men.
Joaquin Phoenix is one of the best villains.
Dude, how
and
good
you
is
want
he?
To just jump into that screen, into that thing, and
rip him apart,
and also just put a knife in his
you
chest.
You want to? He's a snake. He's, and it's such a. I think that like the good versus evil, that basic narrative, is represented in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And like with that, Russell Crowe, that's like virtue and integrity and whatever.
Yeah. And it's also about his potential, the fact that he is dumbed down to being the gladiator, but there is just so much more to him. And he unlocks
he's
his
got the
kind
deep
of,
usefulness inside him.
Yeah, fuck. And it's going to be interesting to see what Gladiator 2 is, because that's later this year.
Is it also Ridley Scott?
He's involved. He's not directing it, okay. I don't think. But he is involved.
I think
it's weird. I'm curious to know what that could be and what it's going to be. But I want to tell you, I think you'd appreciate this. I'm lucky enough to go to Rome again.
Shit.
And I'm going in August. I'm going soon. And we are taking...
You're going to be healthy, bro. You're not getting sick there.
No,
you can,
fuck no. And we are taking a niece and nephew. This is my sister's kids. And the point is to show them the Colosseum and the Parthenon and the Roman Forum. And then we're going to do this little like beachy component. I am forcing my niece and nephew, who are cool. They're like 13. They're like old enough to appreciate. I am taking them to the bioscope, bringing them here, and I'm playing them Gladiator.
Yes, dude. But that is like watching Sprint in front of the Olympics.
Yeah. I was like, you got to watch Gladiator before we go and stand in the Colosseum. You got to see it.
Dude, that is
and so they
brilliant.
Pumped.
Dude,
so, yeah.
That is such a, that's a Kiff Uncle idea.
That
is rad, dude.
I think so. So I'm excited to do that.
Dude, that's so cool. By the
and
way.
I think of you when we get to the final scene.
Please do. Please do. I remember Man on Fire also having a similar vibe with Denzel Washington.
It's that revenge.
It's that revenge. It's like
get him.
Badass sort of
Righting the wrongs. Yeah.
Yes. The other movie I really look forward to watching, and I heard you guys talking it on the podcast you released yesterday, was I'm sure I'm going to like it. It's Inside Out 2.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
It's so magical.
I saw Inside Out 1, and I was like,
an extension of that. Yeah. It's a perfect extension. And what I said, why it hit for me, is that one of these kids that are going with us to Rome, the niece, looks very similar to Riley, the main character of Inside Out. Is this kind of 13-year-old girl with braces that also is just also going to want to try and fit in now that she's in high school. And like, so a part of me was like, fuck, this is important.
Yes.
And it's the highest grossing animated film of all time now. Like Inside Out 2.
That is, and it's pretty recent. And it's not even like years.
Yeah, and it's important. It's important.
It is.
We all have to remember what it's like to be 13. And if you've got kids that are like 7, 8 on the cusp of this, it's very important for them to understand and for the moms.
I wish
and
we
parents,
could watch Inside Out when we were 12.
It could give us so much we would, more help.
Because I wouldn't be on the Windhat list.
Someone posted something the other day. They were at a Tempin bowling alley.
Yeah.
And you know how they rack up the balls?
Yeah.
And apparently a little kid sort of made a comment to their parents. They said, wow, this place has got a lot of core emotions. Because you know that's how they stack up these balls.
Well, that is classic.
So these kids are seeing the world in a whole new way.
Dude, that's brilliant. That is so cool, man.
But Pity, we can chat forever.
I know, we can, dude. The kinship continues.
And I hope to bump into you more. I hope to see you and further down the line.
We will.
I know we will. But thanks for popping in, man.
Thank you, dude.
I look
forward to next time. Like, we were talking about the movie, but about my life. But as I was asking about, you know, Bryanston High and stuff, like, you're such a lucky dude. Like, I look forward to we'll pick up all of the pieces as we go.
We'll keep chatting, and you are. And this is what the formula of the video story is. You're also very welcome to come back. It's not a one time deal.
Appreciate it, bro. But
we'll see each other down the line. I think Exi Perfexi seems to be, you know, made authentically and real and fun, and something that you really truly are proud of, and I'm sure that's going to translate.
I'm sure.
And I'm sure folks will dig it.
Yes, 9 August on Showmax, Exi Perfexi. I'm sure there's English subtitles. So
no, there certainly will be. But it's going to be something for everyone, because we all have these relationships. And
100%.
We all have these exes and these relationship to exes. And so
yes.
It's fun to play in that game.
You are ex. You've been the dumpy or the dump. Like it's lacquer, dude. I love it when it's like, I love the hero story, but I love the loser finding himself story even more sometimes. You know what I mean? Like the loser settling into himself and then it becomes cool.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Lovely, man.
Dude, thank you, Russell. Okay. Appreciate it, dude.
Cool. Cheers. Like, all right. What a lekker chat. And what a lovely dude. We really like, I don't know whether you were overhearing much of the chat, guys, but we really like got into the vulnerable subtleties, you know, of what it's like to be in high school.
Yes.
Oh, he's such a nice dude. But something that maybe you guys didn't know, but also just to let the folks know, is before we have these chats, we usually wander to Been There, which is a lovely coffee shop here at 44 Stanley. Petey rocked up with the coffees. He bought me a coffee.
Sweet.
Hey, what a nice dude. After the chat, I thought a lot about it and was like, that was such a good chat. It was really like, it was the, you know, we've always had great chats. And we've got great customers that always, you know, always deliver in some way.
Mm.
But every now and again, I do a chat where I'm like, this is why I love this particular component of the video store. This is why I do these chats.
Mm-hmm.
I love you guys as the clerks. I really love our Tuesday episodes. Gives us a chance to like really geek out and get into the meat of it. But when you have a good one-on-one conversation with someone that is uninterrupted for 40 minutes to an hour, not only do you now realize how much of a treat that is and rare in our lives, but a chat like this just reminded me, like, this is why this is special.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that. And I wanted to message him later in the day to go like, thank you for that. That was special. He beat me to that too. And I messaged him. I was like, just like the coffees, you fucking beat me to this. And he messaged to say, thanks, that was really great.
Oh, sweet.
Nice.
So yeah, go out and watch Exi Perfexi.
Yeah.
I think it looks like it's going to be fun. And it looks like it could just be a movie for everyone about dating, about exes, about where you fit into relationships. So I think we can all relate.
Cool.
So go out and enjoy it and let us know what you guys think.
Yeah.
We have previous episodes with many an actor. As I said, Maud and Cindy are two standouts that are both in this film. So go back and check those. But all links are at thevideostore.co.za. We've got a few guest episodes that are highlighted in categories so that you can go back and see particular episodes. We must add more.
Yes.
I must update that. There's not necessarily a reason why there's not more. I must just put more up there. But they all are available back down in your feed. So go and check them out. And we'll see you again on Tuesday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Mm.
Lekker. Thanks for your time. Thanks for wandering in. And we'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.